And the reason is actually the reason that you give. And so what I'm actually calling for on this panel is honesty about our actual reasons. So people are giving answers and giving reasons according to justice for why we should not have these kind of programs. And I think that's dishonest. I think the real reason that we should not have affirmative action is not because it's unjust. I think affirmative action redresses a past injustice. But I think the reason we shouldn't have affirmative action programs is precisely what you say, is because it provides or extends a government power. This is also Adam's point, right? It extends the government power to a place where it could easily and probably will and almost probably could not avoid being used for an unjust purpose, right? And also with the full recognition that I have an opinion, a belief, something that I can't defend at the end by anything other than punching you in the face, right? The belief that black people should not have been enslaved and that doing so has created a burden for future generations of black people that I feel is unjust, right? But at the end of the day, what is my ultimate argument? What is the difference between that statement and the libraries are good statement, right? I'm not sure that we can actually draw a line, like I said, besides end up, you know, just stomping our feet. I'm not sure that there's a line that can be drawn there. I see it, and I think that everybody here sees it, right? And maybe unanimity is the way that we can decide that. But there are people out there that disagree with this statement, right? So in that sense, I think that I'm not arguing for most government, I can't even say any that I can think of, government policies to redress social injustices. I don't think that that means they don't exist. And I think one of our biggest failings on this side of the aisle often is that we imagine that the other side is ignoring all of the good arguments. But in fact, we are also ignoring all of the good arguments, and we're trying to pretend that these sort of injustices don't exist as a way to avoid having to deal with them. I mean, Elaine is absolutely right. So there is no just or unjust outcome of the market. Okay, it's a spontaneous order without a person directing it. My salary is not just or unjust. It is not at all connected to how much I work, as opposed to how much a philosopher works, or even their contribution to the college, right? They have to pay me more. They don't want to, believe me. They do not want to, okay? They have to. This is not according to their idea of distributed justice. They have to, or else I'll go somewhere else. Okay, this is not a matter of justice. This is a matter of a market outcome. It's not just or unjust. But we want to claim justice for market outcomes, right? Because we like markets. And I love markets, but it's not a matter of justice, right? So that's the answer.
Elaine and Jim both wanted to...
I'm not claiming justice for market outcomes. I'm saying it's an inappropriate concept to apply. It's neither just nor unjust. No, you said I was claiming that market outcomes were just.
No. I said we. I didn't say you.
All right, fine. But anyway. Actually,
I recognize explicitly that you are not, and right. That was my point.
I'll stop there.
Jim, did you want
to... Sorry, can I just... The other point that I originally wanted to say, there is a vast difference between libraries and affirmative action in that... In affirmative action, someone who has applied for a job who would perhaps, in the absence of affirmative action, better fulfill the criteria is being denied that which would ordinarily have been the appropriate outcome. And if you have a library, particularly if it's privately funded, you're simply there is a provision for those who need it or want it. You're not depriving anyone of anything.
Jim?
I think, Jen, you make a mistake when you say that the college has to do something. Yep. There's always a choice, yep. Always. The college could have hired someone less competent than you. The college could have reduced the number of staff in the Department of Economics, canceled some courses, have larger sections. There's always a choice. Second, I disagree slightly with Elaine. I think that the market outcome is just because it is just. Because the college is being forced, wrong. College is paying to me an amount of money based on my perceived marginal contribution to those persons who are willing to pay. And I think that is just.
No. Comment, question.
Hi, I'm Alex Arnolovich from the University of Rochester. Professor Jen, I wanted to say, I think wages are price signals, right? They're supposed to be working like that, as far as justice goes there. But I wanted to ask, when we think of justice in terms of sort of our classical sense, if we think about it as restorative in terms of Mill's harm principle, we think of government being able to act coercively only to fix when one citizen has sort of harmed another against his consent. And so this raises concerns for me about competing claims of negative rights of one against another. So in cases when we're dealing with serious consequences from pollution, if you can't go outside in Los Angeles because of smog, there's serious damage being done, right, potential damage being done by ozone and particulate matter, right, in the air. Serious violations of sort of myself. And I understand, even, Elaine, like you say, consequences don't matter. Maximize liberty. And so, oh, I'm sorry.
Consequences do matter.
Oh, sorry. Happiness doesn't matter. Don't maximize happiness, maximize liberty. Is that correct?
For as a purpose of government.
Right, as a purpose of government. So I'm just concerned that it seems like sometimes to correct negative rights violations, we have to violate other serious negative rights. So if in the future, let's say potentially, so I don't want to argue about global warming right now, but if the Maldives were to disappear in the future, and it turns out that it could have been preventable if we had not reduced our carbon emissions, what sort of responsibility would we have? And in the hypothetical where global warming is occurring, how do you respond to that? Would you, do you shut down the coal plants? Do you shut down your vehicles? And so how do we deal with that? Thanks.
May I respond?
Please do.
Right. Part of the problem that you sketch out comes from inadequately well-defined property rights. Now, if one had adequate property rights, then I would simply refer you to Ronald Coase's work. Uh-huh. This is a way of dealing with these things. Global warming is a slogan which encompasses a great many different questions which need to be unpacked before one can have any kind of sensible response to it. Does it mean that there is a change in climatic conditions? Are those climatic conditions changing in ways that were unprecedented in future, in past ages? What is the cause of those climatic changes to the extent that they exist? Are the changes expected to be harmful? Over what period? In what way? To which groups? If they are caused by human activity, as opposed to, example, cows farting, which is perhaps one of the most substantial elements that it contributes to carbon dioxide emissions,
so it's
then
methane.
What, if anything, ought to be done about that? Is it something that needs to be done immediately, over again, over what time period? Is there something which is best done at all, possibly done through coercive action or through voluntary action? There are all of these questions which need to be addressed before we can give a sensible response to that. But for all of them, I would suggest that more comprehensive and carefully defined property rights would be a very great help.
Hi there. I'm Dylan Del Santi from Hamden Sydney College. In this essay on equality, value, and merit, Hayek sort of makes this paradigm between rewarding successful outcomes and rewarding like duty and merit. And I was wondering, you know, it seems to make sense to me that we should reward those who help who come to successful outcomes regardless of how hard they worked. You know, like we want to reward the entrepreneurs who cut costs and just brought what we brought to market what we valued, regardless of how they did it. But sort of outside of a market context, and I usually don't like to draw that distinction, but just for this question I will. Sort of outside of market context, don't we also want to reward people not simply for just doing the right thing, but doing the right thing the right way? Thank you.
If you want to, Lane, go ahead.
Sure. But, I mean, how we act in our capacity as moral individuals is a quite separate matter from what coercive government should be allowed to do. Sorry, because we want to be able to act individually as moral individuals, we need to restrict the uses of coercive force upon us. One of the criteria of acting virtuously is doing the right thing for the right reason. And that precludes because you are obliged to do it at the point of a gun or because somebody is holding an axe over your head. Freedom of action is a necessary precondition of virtuous action. So, as I pointed out yesterday, I mean, libertarianism is simply a doctrine about what government, the limitations of government. It doesn't say anything at all about what the content of your moral priorities ought to be. And I would suggest that it is only possible to have a fully developed and fully operational set of moral priorities when you are not precluded by coercive action from making the kinds of choices that you need to make and from performing the actions that you need to make. It doesn't count as charity if the government forces the money out of your pocket and hands it to somebody else. You get no moral credit for that. You don't even get credit necessarily for voting for it, because you're presumably expecting most of the benefit to come from the other 99.999% of the population, who in aggregate will almost certainly be contributing more than you do. So I would suggest that by all means I'm not telling people what to do. I think it is morally preferable for people to do the right thing, and I have very clear views along with Aristotle about what the right thing consists in, though again that's not a matter of abstract principles, but requires the use of practical reason, which determines what the right thing to do is in the circumstances, bearing in mind all of the particularities of those circumstances. So although there are some very general rules of thumb, one always has to have a regard to exactly what is going on here in determining what is the morally right thing to do. So it's vitally important to do that if one wishes to be a good human being and live a flourishing life, as Aristotle and I would say. But that's not anything to do with what government should be doing, and in fact, except that government can prevent you from doing it.
Mike?
Even without coercion, I'm sure you've heard a million times, you know, we're free to do that ourselves privately, so you can shop at a company that you think does the right thing and choose to pay more for it to have workers that have 8 weeks of vacation and so on and so forth. But I think it's even hard for you to do that. So we've all had discussions about whether sweatshops are good or bad. And, you know, if you take them in a vacuum, yeah, having a kid in a factory doesn't sound good. And as you know, that's probably better than his best alternatives. So I'm not even sure that you, in the market, without coercion, can even make the choice yourself about how do you reward something that's right, being done the right way. You stop shopping the factories, those kids may go back to where they were. So I don't know.
Go ahead.
I'm Christy Oren from Hamilton College. And Professor Paquette often quotes or talks about De Juvenal, I think it's De Juvenal, talking about how attaining social justice is similar to attaining just ends through unjust means. And as we've had some brief discussion about affirmative action programs in both schools and employment, as Dr. Sternberg pointed out, looking at the whole spectrum of people who are influenced by affirmative action programs, these programs often deprive people of certain opportunities that they actually deserve. So I'm wondering what you guys would have to say in response to the people who actually receive an injustice through these particular programs, and in which case does the government end up trying to help those people achieve justice as well? In which case, wouldn't it end up in a circle of the government constantly trying to achieve justice for everyone in our society?
I think one of the issues that comes up in that question is when you're looking at the totality of the circumstances, you see that there are a lot of different conceptions of justice and parts of the problem that are happening at the same time. So if you look at it only from the point of view of opportunity to have that job or that place in that college, you might see a certain injustice. And if you look at it from a different perspective, one of the ones that Jen came up with about cultural conceptions and having the right role models for the next generation, the more just question might depend on hiring the person who's less qualified because you have other values in mind. And because of that extremely incommensurate set of values, it's going to be inappropriate to just say, oh, because of that part of the problem, which is unjust, the rest of the solution that somebody has proposed, that the whole thing is unjust. That's all I'll say.
Yes, Dr. Eric Filipiak, the Ted Eisenmeyer Fellow here at the AHI. First off, just a comment. Listening to Jen's argument, I'm reminded of that film, The Big Chill. And and if you recall, the deceased, his favorite song that was played at the funeral you can't always get what you want by the Rolling Stones. And whenever I hear arguments like this, that always comes to mind. But I guess what I want to ask you is, if you're concerned about poverty and the lack of opportunity, what's your answer in terms of an economic system? And I'm just thinking of, you know, Schumpeter and the dynamism that he describes in the capitalist system and how it has created all this wealth and improved the living standards of countless millions of people. And I wonder what the alternative is to that. If you can, and you can look around in this country now, I mean, all the lower and middle class families with multiple cars and television sets. Now, maybe that's not the value that you or I would have, and maybe they should invest that wealth in education or other things. But they're certainly living much better than people did generations ago, 30 or 40 years ago. What would be the alternative?
I'm really glad you asked that question, because that's been on my mind as this whole thing has been bandied around right now. Another place where you can see a sort of example of that, Tom Wolfe's early writings back, not Thomas Wolfe, but Tom Wolfe, the Write Stuff Tom Wolfe, his early writings back in the 60s when he was writing for Esquire, he has these fantastic discussions about consumer culture and what it's doing to American society in 62 and 63 and 64. And he looks at things like hot rod cars and, you know, the dances that kids are doing. And it's really interesting social commentary, but there really is an advantage to what happened as a result, I think, of the expansive kind of redistributive scheme, for lack of a better term, that came about during the 1940s and 50s and 60s. I have yet to hear anybody kind of say anything that makes me think that that didn't happen, you know, that that was not an advantage. Again, is there a utility to this government expansion? And we're going to be talking about that more in the next panel as well. Yeah, go ahead, Elaine.
I was just going to comment. You mentioned Tom Wolfe. On the plane coming up here, I was reading a book of libertarian short science fiction stories, and one of them was entitled "The Right's Tough." I think that expresses some of the feelings that people have had on the panel. Sadly, it didn't live up to the title.
I think it lived down to it, actually.
Can I just make one point? Let me just remind you again that it's not just the left and people who want social justice who want something. All right, you can't always get what you want applies to you as well. All right, what we want in terms of equality before the law and a limited government, that is a tall order. Okay, that is really wanting something. So don't delude yourself to think that this is not wanting something of other people. You're asking people to go against a lot of ingrained belief when you ask them to ascribe to a doctrine of limited government. All right, you're asking them to make tough choices that have very, very unsettling short-term consequences for these long-term consequences. So you can't always get what you want applies to yourself. All right, this is something that you need to turn around and realize that this is what's going on. This is why we're in it. This is why it's a struggle. Okay, so I would just say that there is that you're again, it's you're right. Okay, but you separate the dynamic from the static ideas of justice or even of outcomes here, right? So I think that something that Jim said is that if there were really no productivity differences between, you know, men and women or black people and white people that were causing wage or opportunity differences, then that you'd have some entrepreneur that would come about and solve that by profiting on it, right? Absolutely. That's true, especially in the perfect competition world of the blackboard when we're doing economics. It's absolutely 100% always true right at the exact moment, right? The problem is that, as we know, in the real world, we only ever approximate equilibrium. We never actually get there, right? And not just that, we are human beings who don't have the ability to perfectly perceive all of the opportunities around us. All right, there are so many entrepreneurial opportunities that people are not perceiving right now. And whether one of those is that there are, you know, women being undervalued or Latinos being undervalued or whatnot, all right, is going to, doesn't, there's no guarantee that, that entrepreneurs will see every opportunity. I guarantee, as a matter of fact, there's a guarantee that entrepreneurs will not see every opportunity. Okay? So there's no way that you can use that as a guarantee of some sort of social justice.
You don't sail to the lighthouse, you sail toward it.
Well, it depends on the direction the wind's coming from. And usually you sail away from the lighthouse. Just that's it for this panel. We're out of time. So